Okay, we'll call to order the House Revenue Committee meeting this morning. We have, at least I see, Representative Greenlee. Did you want to sit up here? You come on up. We'll find you. Who do you want to be today?
With you.
Well, no, who?
It's very funny.
Come on up. Welcome, Representative Brown, Chair of the Transportation Committee, and Representative Greenlee, and Representative Beyer. Come on up from the Transportation Committee. Happy to have you folks with us.
No.
Again, for everyone's information, the sign-up sheets for House Bill 2041 are over on the table. We are in work session today. We will be in work session today, but I'll be happy to receive testimony in favor of the bill. So within that narrow constraint, feel free to, no, I'm serious, anybody who wants to, I'm not serious, anybody who wants to speak on the bill, we will hear from you. And also let me say, we will go through work session today, try and take all the testimony this morning. We will not move the bill, we will not move the bill this morning. We may come back, we're on 1 hour notice. Perhaps this afternoon, we're meeting also tomorrow morning, and so I didn't want to surprise anybody at the end of the meeting where we don't move the bill. That is the plan now, not to move the bill in this session, but we will come back to it either again this afternoon or perhaps tomorrow morning. So with that, let me open a work session on House Bill 2041. And Dick, do you want to start with the slideshow?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Richard Yates with Legislative Revenue. First, just to go through the materials you have before you.
Representative Mabry, come on up. Yeah, you bet.
You have copies of the slides I'm going through today, and attached or appended thereto are several tables, which we'll also look at. And then you have the staff measure summary, essentially as the bill came out of transportation, and the revenue impact statement for the engross bill. You have a letter there which is in response to a question when we actually did orientation months ago by, I believe, Representative Berger with respect to the safety of triple trailers. And so you have a response to that question from ODOT.
Thank you.
You also have an agreement, essentially, which we'll get to in terms of the bill, between Multnomah County and the cities within the county. In terms of how they plan to spend some of these monies. You also have the dash A-10 and A-14 amendments in the bill.
Yes.
Okay. I just want to go through briefly the major provisions, essentially, of the bill. We start with the fact that bonding is one of the main issues to try and put a substantial amount of money out there into bridges primarily, but also into modernization. And associated therewith, a set of taxes and fees that are increased to be able to pay the debt service on those bonds as they're issued. Second aspect of the bill is what it's been called in the bill income tax capture. Some call it sequestering. Essentially, it's trying to identify the amount of revenue, personal income tax revenue that's generated by the contracts that are funded by the bonds. And the use of those monies, since those are general fund monies, they're not subject to the constitutional dedication to the highways. And so they're able to use those for a truck engine tax credit, for vehicle replacement for mass transit districts and senior and disabled transit. And also to try and encourage the efficient use of the capacity of Oregon's highways. Next, there are provisions that deal with project selection and expediting, i.e. getting the dollars out there on the roads now, essentially creating the jobs as soon as possible. In the area of public contracting and freight mobility, a second set of fee increases which provide money for local governments, and these are essentially for dedicated monies to the highways and can be used by those jurisdictions. They're not expected to be required for debt service on the bonding. And then at the end, I simply summarize some of the other provisions that are in the bill. When we look at net proceeds of bonds, what's authorized by the bill essentially is bonds for bridge replacement and repair for state highways, the major proportion, $1.3 billion. And I think basically the expectation is that'll be spent over the next 10 years or so. And $0.3 billion or $300 million for city and county bridge replacement and repair. And then an additional $300 million for modernization. $100 million of that amount is for projects identified by the Freight Advisory Committee as being important, essentially, to freight mobility, and also for access to industrial land sites, and in particular access to sites where jobs are going to be created. So if it's some kind of a production facility or a warehousing facility or something that generates jobs, it would be given priority. The remaining $200 million of that would be used for modernization projects under ODOT's existing authority, except that they're directed to give priority to projects which are ready for construction. The taxes that support this bonding, i.e. these taxes, are basically dedicated to debt service. From light vehicles, we have about $27.7 million in title fees, about $41.8 million in registration fees, total increase on light vehicles of $69.5 million. Heavy vehicles, you get $10 million in registration fees, $19 million in the weight mile tax, flat fees, and the road use assessment fee. Sorry for the acronyms, but limit on space here.
Per year, per biennium.
No. This is an annual.
Yeah,
it's essentially taking a biennium and dividing it by two, so it annualizes it. So you get a total of $98.9 million. And let me just look at a couple of the sheets you have there for a moment. Get my mouse to work. Okay, this is essentially the sheet which shows which fees are increased and how they're split between heavy and light vehicles. You see the increases in title fees from $30 to $55 and other various.
Can you read that?
And you have this attached to the back of the slide so you can see the whole sheet. Unfortunately, with the computer, I can't get the whole worksheet on the screen. A little bigger, maybe. Okay, we'll come back to that sheet later. Are there any questions there in terms of you have the sections in the bill essentially where these fees are increased and the types of vehicles or trailers or whatever that they apply to. At the bottom, we see again $69 million being raised from light vehicles, $29 from heavy vehicles. And if you look at the ratio there, you've got 70% coming from the light vehicles and 29% coming from the heavy vehicles. And if you think about that, it may seem in conflict with the cost share, the heavy vehicle cost share as determined by the Highway Cost Allocation Study, which is essentially 33.4%. And the reason that comes about is we made an adjustment here in determining what the truck fees would be here for the heavy vehicles between 8,000 to 26,000 pounds and over 26,000 pounds to give them credit essentially for the fact that they're currently overpaying. And I think it's worth just briefly taking a look through that, how I went about that. If we start in the first box here, essentially, and again, you do have a full-page printout there that you can look at. This is data that essentially comes from the Highway Cost Allocation Study. It relates to full fee-paying vehicles. And what we have then is the light vehicles paying $455 million, heavy vehicles paying $233 million, for a total of $688 million. The highway cost allocation study then determined that light vehicles were underpaying. If these ratios are one, then the vehicle is cost or the vehicle group is cost responsible. So because the light vehicles are less than one, they're underpaying. Mm-hmm. Heavy vehicles are greater than one, they're overpaying. So the first calculation, if you like, was to adjust these basic figures to what they would be if both groups were cost responsible. Now, there's obviously three ways to do that. One, you can increase the fees from the light vehicles. Two, you can decrease the heavy vehicle fees, or some combination of the two. The method taken here was to reduce the heavy vehicle payments to bring them into cost responsibility. So if you subtract $5,435,000 from the $233,000, you get $227,000, which is what the heavy vehicles should be paying if the existing system were cost responsible between the two classes. And you can see that matches out here with the same percents as you saw the other day in the highway cost allocation study. So the next problem was then to determine how much money essentially to be raised from heavy vehicles, and how that was going to be done. So we essentially started with an assumption of about $69.5 million as the amount that we wanted to be raised from light vehicles. And if that's true, that's this number, the heavy vehicle must be about 50.1% of the light vehicles, which gives you 34.8 you want to raise from heavy vehicles. Now, these are cost-responsible increments, so you're raising $104 million, essentially, in a cost-responsible way. So then you get to the total cost. You add the cost under the existing system for light vehicles plus the increase, and you get to the 524. The same is true for the heavy vehicles at $262.8 million. So again, you see that the bill is raising, or the planning schedule here would raise $98.8 million, essentially, over $104 million over the adjusted or reduced revenues after you've made the highway cost allocation adjustment, or $98 over what revenues actually were for the study. The question then is how to raise that, and if I come over to the next box, essentially, what I've got is a division between the vehicles which are in 8 to 26,000 pounds and those that are over 26,000 pounds, registration fees for both, and the weight mile flat fee and road use assessment fees for the vehicles over 26,000 pounds. Those are the fees that we can change with the rates that we're dealing with, either registration fees, weight mile taxes, flat fees, or road use assessment fees. So it's changes to those amounts which are going to bring about the increase. Now, the objective here was to make the percentage increase the same for the vehicles in the 8 to 26,000 pound class as for the vehicles over 26,000 pounds. So what I've done here is simply to determine the overall percentage increase of 12.7%, then use only registration fees to raise that. That's the only tool available to me. From the vehicles between 8 and 26,000 pounds. That required a 53.26% increase in those registration fees. And so that's how those were computed. So then I applied that same percentage to the heavy vehicles, and I get an increase in their registration fees of $7.3 million. What was needed then to balance the total 29 and to raise the 12.7% from the heavy vehicle class was another $19.3 million. And that required a 9.92% increase in the weight mile taxes, flat fees, and road use assessment fees. So that's how the numbers should be for this. If we come back down here to this last box, you can see how well the run actually did when I ran the highway cost allocation model with the changed rates. Again, if you look at full fee paying vehicles down here in the bottom, you see we raised $104 million as compared with the target of $104.8 million as compared with a target of $104.3 million, so it's pretty close. Okay. Any questions?
Well,
Representative Barnhart.
That's well within the margin of error, isn't it?
Yeah.
Close enough for the government to look at, I think, is what they say. Yeah.
Excuse me, error of measure. Sorry.
Oh, okay. Other questions before we go on to take testimony?
We're not done yet.
I'm sorry, before you finish your slideshow.
Distribution, then, of those revenues is basically determined by percentages in the bill, 57.53% going to the state. So that's about $56.9 million, about $25.2 million for the counties and $16.8 million for the cities. Now, these monies are primarily intended to be used for debt service against those bonds to be issued. However, they may not all be necessary in the city and county case. I think they're probably not sufficient in the state case, but anyway. For the cities and counties, they may be more than sufficient to fund debt service, and that depends on when the bonds are issued and how much are actually issued. So we have... there may be some that's not necessary for debt service, and that's what's called a wedge, essentially, or has been called a wedge. Some amount of these monies may be distributed to the cities and counties if they're not needed for debt service, and those monies then can be used by the cities and counties for other highway purposes. Two comments. One, in the taxes up here, I did not indicate some fee increases on travel trailers, motorhomes, and campers, which are dedicated to parks. So the bill does also raise another $6.3 million, which goes to parks. And the original bill required that be used for the Lewis and Clark Bicentennial, but there's no restrictions on this, but I understand it will help to fund those activities. The other catch in this is that the money, if there's any wedge money here for the counties, the portion going to Multnomah County is at least half of that has to be used for bridges, and the balance then has to be spent according to agreement between the cities and counties, and that's the relevancy of the note that you have in your materials, which indicates they've already reached an agreement as to how that would be spent. Income tax capture, then you have the question of identified revenues. And that's saying, okay, first of all, it's personal income taxes, so it's individuals that are paying those taxes. They could be from a Schedule C business. They could be from simply wages that are paid. And the personal income taxes have to be generated from private sector work. So if there are government activities involved, payments to individuals, those individuals pay taxes, it's not counted. And it's only those private sector work projects which are funded by the net proceeds of these bonds. It requires DAS to estimate this each biennium. It requires that the estimate be included in the governor's budget, and it requires that the legislature make an appropriation to the Transportation Reinvestment Fund. And it sunsets in 2008.
Yes, sir, Representative Berger.
Yeah, would you go through that one more time?
Okay. Basically,
estimate's going to be made by
the flow of the
funds.
Yes, DAS is going to essentially estimate the amount of personal income. First of all, let's start with what projects are going to be funded by the net proceeds of the bonds, what private sector work is going to be generated by those projects, and what personal income taxes are going to be paid as a result of that. And those are what they call identified revenues. And then those identified revenues must be included in the governor's budget, and it requires the legislature essentially to appropriate those amounts to the Transportation Reinvestment Fund. What this does is to provide some money which is not dedicated essentially to the highways because it's general fund money.
And Dick, on that, and maybe we'll get into that, but as I see in Section 23, there's a cap on different components of that Transportation Reinvestment Fund, a
yes,
dollar limit?
We will.
Okay.
Income tax capture. Okay, I'm going to take one more little detour here, and then we'll get right back to this. We don't really know what the bond issues are going to look like. But I threw a schedule out here, and I apologize here because I misread. I thought there was a sunset in terms of when the bonds have to be issued. So I had them all issued by 2010. I suspect it will be out substantially further before they're all issued. But we have essentially three types of bonds for state bridges, local bridges, and modernization. And basically what I have is about, this is driven essentially off the state bridge assumptions here, $50 million in the first year, $150 million. And then if you're going to spend the rest over this six-year period, they're going to have to spend about $244 million a year. So this is sort of how I'm saying they're going to issue the total of $1.9 billion in bonds through 2010. If they do that, then given that 72% of the expenditures from those bond proceeds actually result in contracts, and that 58% of those are generating essentially wage income, we get down to contract wages of about 30 million. See whether that was a comma or a decimal point right there. In contract wages, and then increasing to about $140 million, and then I have direct tax revenue of $1.8 million being generated, and the bill says direct and indirect revenues, so you have to have a multiplier, and the best estimate of the multiplier is that essentially for each dollar that is direct, you're creating another 25 cents in indirect activity. So that gets us down to essentially in the first year you're going to generate about $2.27 million in identified tax revenue, and then $608 in the second year, and about $11 million each year thereafter. So that for the biennium would generate $9 million in the first biennium and about $22.5 million in each biennium. The distribution then says it will go to, now this should say mass transit vehicle replacement. That was amended in the bill. Sorry, I didn't see that last night. This will go, 20% of this amount goes to mass transit vehicle replacement up to a maximum of $1 million per year. The same sort of provision exists with respect to capacity utilization. It's 20% of the total up to $1 million a year. And then on the truck engine tax credit, it's 60% of the total up to a maximum of $3 million per year. So, you know, if this were some sort of reasonable schedule, and I think it's over-aggressive, you're a little bit short in terms of generating the full expected amount of money in the first biennium, but you've got a surplus in the later bienniums, and under the bill what happens is that simply reverts back to the general fund.
Yes, Representative Booker.
Would you clarify mass transit replacement?
basically, ODOT has authority to with federal monies and with the cigarette tax monies to assist local governments with vehicle replacement. And what this does is add another amount of money, is my understanding, and you might want to ask somebody that really knows, but it would simply add another $1 million a year to the amount of money that's available for them to essentially work with local governments on the question of, well, with the three mass transit districts, Lane, TriMet, and Salem, and then with the senior and disabled transportation group for on vehicle replacement.
Oh, sorry, did you pull it?
Follow-up.
Yeah.
So I'm to understand in the amendment that senior and disabled transit was not eliminated?
No. I guess it's made somewhat different in the sense that before it just said senior and disabled transit, and so for any purpose, and now it's vehicle replacement.
Representative Berger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Dick, briefly, you went by real fast that 72% contracts let and 58% wages. Where do you get those?
Yeah. You're not supposed to ask that.
It's the Office of Economic Analysis.
I started out with this model, and I had a little different numbers in there, but I came very close to essentially what ODOT uses in a little different approach. to estimate job growth, essentially, or job impact from their expenditures. Ron Chastain, who's now a consultant with ODOT, had worked with me, essentially, and I basically agreed that those were good numbers and just amended my approach here to be consistent with what they've done. So it does have some literature background. It's not totally pulled out of the air. but they're guesses.
Thank you.
There we go. If that wasn't, it is.
Anything else?
Mr. Chair?
Yeah, Representative Bornhardt.
I don't know what the term contract factor means.
Well, it's a percentage of the amount that LDOT spends, which results in private sector contracts.
Ah, thank you.
Okay.
And it's exactly 72%.
That one we know.
To continue. Where are we here? Okay, use of the income tax revenue then is most of it goes to a truck engine tax credit. That's to be sort of jointly administered between DEQ and the Department of Revenue, Department of Environmental Quality. The project has to be certified as meeting certain EPA standards, the engine that's purchased by DEQ. And the last time they can make any certification is December 31st of 2007. So effectively, that's when the program sunsets. The amount of the credit varies from $400 to $925, and it's dependent upon a fleet size. The smaller fleets, I think it's 1 to 10, get the maximum amount, $925. For the larger fleets, larger companies, presumably, the amount of the credit is smaller. The amount that any one taxpayer can get in a year is capped at $80,000, and the amount that that the total that can be certified in any calendar year is $3 million. But it also says it's the lesser of $3 million or the amount that DAS actually certifies as being available for that credit. So in that first year where we were, if reality came out to be close to the example that I had, you would not have enough money to certify $3 million. You would only be able to certify whatever it was, something less than $3 million, $2.4 something. So they cannot it cannot result in a tax credit being funded by general fund revenues, which are not identified revenues.
Dick, I'm curious. Are these engines that would qualify under the criteria that applies to the pollution control tax credit? It's either emission reduction, that's the point or the purpose of it.
I guess I don't know for sure. I have assumed not. They are engines that will be required. In other words, they are engines that EPA engines that meet the increased or higher standards that EPA is going to impose in the future. So they don't have a choice about not buying right. those engines. But this is to sort of assist them in the sense of some of those, I guess, are substantial expenditures for the companies involved.
So we don't need to know for the purpose of this bill today. I'd be curious to know for sure. Anything else on this slide?
The tax credit is basically non-refundable. So if the trucking firm does not make any profit, they don't get a check from the state. It can only offset tax liability. It does have a five-year carry forward. The other uses then of the income tax revenue, we talked a little bit about the mass transit vehicle replacement, and I don't really know too much about that. But again, you cannot spend highway funds for that purpose, so it does provide monies that ODOT can use for that purpose. The same is true of the efficient use of highway capacity. Again, I don't know too much about what's planned there. But I think what's being talked about to a certain extent is trying to get people to use the highways at non-peak periods, or trying to encourage carpooling and things of that sort. Again, those are expenditures which they couldn't make from general fund, from highway fund dollars. Again, to move through the sections on public on project selection, it simply gives the director of ODOT the power to exempt or reduce the requirements for bid security and for good and sufficient bonds. We're moving sort of into an area where we're dealing with design contracts or design bidding and dealing with firms that basically know what they're doing. And it gives the ODOT the opportunity to exempt or reduce those requirements, and is intended essentially, again, to speed up when these projects are actually undertaken. Freight mobility is essentially giving priority to projects which are recommended by the Freight Advisory Committee. The bill also extends the existence of the Freight Advisory Committee, and it requires priority in the STIP to projects that are on identified freight routes that remove barriers to the movement of goods and to facilitate investment that create jobs.
Mr. Chair?
Yeah.
Dick, is there any language in there that gives preference to projects that are already in the planning stage, or should there be language that does this, that already have some planning?
If you move down to the next section there, and I'm not sure which section of the bill, I think it's 10 and 39 sections of the bill that it's in, but it does say with respect to the use of these revenues that come from bonds, ODOT shall select projects essentially to maximize the creation of new jobs and use private sector resources to the greatest extent possible. And with respect to modernization projects, not the bridge replacement, but the modernization projects, they give priority to projects which are ready for construction.
There's on page 11, lines 43 through 45, is that language.
Well,
funding priority for modernization funded with the proceeds of bonds to projects that are ready for construction.
Dick, do you have the dash 16s?
Yeah.
I've got those. They've not been distributed. We'll have a chance to talk about those.
Okay.
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay. Fees for local governments. Again, you've got. I'm not going to go back to the table.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Farr.
Sorry to interrupt, Mr. Ayers. Regarding back to the previous slide, project selection, is there any language or any consideration of giving priority to Oregon-based companies in the letting of the bids?
I don't know what exists in current law. There is nothing in the bill that I saw that addresses that issue.
Okay, thank you.
We can ask for it.
I think under public contracting, you do have a non-resident bidder disclosure, at least that's on the bid documents, but I don't know that there's anything beyond that.
The engine credit is for Oregon.
That's
yeah,
for
Oregon engine tax credit.
Also, engines made in Oregon.
Hmm.
The additional part of the fee of the bill then is some fees that provide money for local governments, which essentially are not tied to the bonds that are being issued. And again, the attempt to remain cost responsibility. And I'm not going to go this time to the Excel worksheet, but you do have a full page attached there which shows all of the fees that were increased and the increases in those fees. So essentially it raised $9 million from light vehicles, $4 million from heavy vehicles, for a total of $13.5 million, and it's right on essentially with respect to the cost responsibility ratios. 60% of those monies are distributed to the counties and 40% to the cities. None of it goes to the state. Quickly then, to go through the other sort of major provisions that are in the bill. It does talk about altering freight routes, and it says that basically in this process you can't reduce the flow of traffic essentially on those routes. It does provide for some exceptions to that. It also provides for the state to use county and city roads as necessary for detours around the bridge work that's being done, and provides for the state to sort of put those roads back together after they've destroyed them. It also provides for quarterly payments for vehicles. We have quarterly payments for Oregon vehicles already, but quarterly payments for vehicles under the International Registration Program. It also directs ODOT to use $200 million in advanced construction. This is federal money for modernization projects. And again, with a 2008 sunset, it changes the special, I didn't expect that, the special county allocation, increasing, this only affects the counties. So of the money that's going out to the counties, another $250,000, I think it is taken out of that and put into the special county allocation, and it also changes the basis upon which the county allocation is made. The last little thing in the bill, then, is with respect to the pilot projects that which ODOT has already authorized work on. It allows them essentially to use variable prices on those roads, or to use peak load pricing essentially. Okay, the issues then that I wanted to raise with respect to this, and this is the last slide, is cost responsibility. With respect to light versus heavy vehicles, I've made every effort in the rates that I designed there to make these rates consistent and to make this end up responsible with the two vehicle classes. If you look at within the vehicle classes, there is only one for the light vehicles, so we have no idea what sort of disparity exists within that class. But with respect to the heavy vehicles, there remains some disparity with respect to the recommended changes in the highway cost allocation. But that seems to be an issue that the heavy vehicles are not very concerned about and not addressed at this time. The only one that bothers me particularly is the road use assessment fee. The highway cost allocation recommendation was that this be increased to 10 cents from the current 5.2, which is a healthy increase. And the existing analysis, while with respect to those vehicles, it's sort of incomplete. The existing analysis does suggest that the single non-divisible load vehicles over 98,000 pounds, for those portions of the trip which they're operated in that fashion, are underpaying their cost responsibility. The last issue then is flat fees, and my concern here is that the state is involved in a lawsuit where the American Trucking Association is essentially trying to have the weight mile tax declared unlawful. And one of the basis of the decision, the state essentially was upheld in the lower court decision, but the judge did note that this was not a carte blanche, and that, in fact, it depended on the state honoring, essentially, the statement that it intends to impose flat fee rates which are revenue neutral, in the sense that if they did not take those flat fee rates but were taxed under the weight mile tax, they would essentially pay the same amount of tax. And so I think as we go through here, and we have a lot of trouble in trying to figure out the mileage for these vehicles that are under flat fees. And so we're not, in terms of confidence intervals, again, we can't really impose tight restrictions on what these vehicles would pay if they were under the weight mile tax. But I've taken the recommendations in the highway cost allocation study, increased those by the same 9.9%. And if you compare that with the numbers in the bill, there's only one case where you're below it. And clearly the log trucks are the dominant use of these flat fees. So I think overall as a group it's pretty clear that they are at least revenue neutral. And that's it.
All right. Thank you very much.
Excellent overview.
Questions of the committee before we get into testimony? Otherwise, I have some witnesses that have signed up to testify, so we'd be happy to invite them forward. Daryl Fuller is out. I think he'll be back. Somebody will be sure to let me know when he comes back in. Mayor Tory, you want to bring up Andrea? Good morning.
Good morning. Chair Senator Lee and members of the committee,
My name is Jim Torrey. I'm the chair of the League of Oregon Cities Transportation Committee and the mayor of the city of Eugene. And I'll be very quick. I want to thank you all for your leadership. This is an extremely important bill. We're ready in cities across the state of Oregon to go to work immediately, if you will get us this money, to get people who are ready to do the work on the maintenance of our city streets. I'll give you an example. In Eugene, we have, by city ordinance, required that these funds be expended by private sector contractors. The only thing that our city is going to be doing with regard to this is developing the RFPs. So there are people out there waiting to go to work, and there are streets that need to be maintained. I think that the bridge issue is extremely important, particularly in Lane County, but all over the state of Oregon. And I would hope that we could move this quickly, and I appreciate all of your efforts on behalf of the citizens of Oregon and on behalf of the cities in Oregon.
Thank you very much. Andrew, you want to say anything? You're just up with the gym.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yes, Representative
Harris. I have a technical question.
Yeah.
Cities. There was an amendment offered by the Speaker last week, a well-intended amendment. I understand that there was an agreement reached earlier this week that fulfilled what she was trying to accomplish then. I now have learned, though, that there may be an unintended technical problem with that with respect to the cities of Lake Oswego and Beaverton and Mayfield Park that are also within Multnomah County. Could you tell me, to the extent you know about that, that that's true or not, or that there's a way to deal with that?
Sure, Chairman Lee, Representative Haas, I'm going to ask the staff person from the League of Oregon Cities to respond, because I was under the impression that as of yesterday that these issues had been resolved.
And Susan Schneider from Portland is here, too, and she can speak to that, I'm sure, as well. But go ahead, Andrew.
Mr. Chair, Representative Haas, Andrea Fogg with the League of Oregon Cities. My understanding as well was that the issue had been resolved. I'm not aware of any unintended consequences. I don't know if you would mind elaborating on that
bit. No, I see there was a letter signed by Troutdale, Wood Village, Portland, and all the cities in the county involved, and I'm glad and I'm happy about that, but there are portions of Lake Oswego and Beaverton in Multnomah County that would be affected who are not party of that. I don't know if there are some unintended technical consequences because they're not in on that.
Mr. Chair, Representative Haas, my understanding, we did talk with the cities of Lake Oswego, with Beaverton, and also with, Maywood Park. And those cities were apprised of the meetings and everything that was going on with the discussions between Multnomah County and those East County cities and the city of Portland. So they were aware, and my understanding was that the intention of the speaker was for that conversation to take place specifically with the cities that you see have signed that letter of agreement.
Well, is there a reason to keep that language in this bill, then?
Mr. Chair, Representative Haas, that situation, as I said, my understanding has been resolved, and so either way, that really is your decision. We support the bill and the package moving forward.
You have your answer? Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Susan, that's a nice transition to you. Susan Schneider will...
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, good morning.
Good morning.
Susan Schneider with Government Relations of the City of Portland. We support House Bill 2041 and appreciate all the work that's gone into getting it this far. We understand that the speaker had some concerns about an existing agreement about 20 years old, actually, intergovernmental agreement between the City of Portland and Multnomah County, which resulted in the proposed language that you're referring to, and how it might affect other cities with respect to this agreement, other cities in Multnomah County. We've since met, and as Andrea noted, the cities of Lake Oswego and City of Beaverton were part of early discussions about how to move forward with this issue. So I do believe they've been included. Maywood Park was invited and just wasn't able to participate and was, we believe, satisfied. We've since met with the other cities who were the, I think, the subject of the speaker's concern. The result is before you in a letter. And it says, in part, as a result of our discussions, we've concluded that we support the distribution of the remaining transportation dollars through the existing City of Portland, Multnomah County and City of Portland revenue sharing agreement. If this legislation passes that requires the formal action, we will forward this commitment to the Oregon Transportation Commission as outlined in the proposed bill. We believe this satisfies the concerns that the speaker raised. Thank you very much.
Go ahead.
Well, this, thank you. Does that then make that language in this bill moot? Is it your recommendation that it be removed, or should it remain?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hass, we do believe that the language is moot, and I think it is within your discretion whether you leave it or take it out.
Well, Mr. Chair, just not having heard from people during the Lake Oswego, if there are some technical issues there, I think that we should take that into consideration.
Representative Berger.
Mr. Chair, I would really like to have the discussion at some point about the removal of it from the package. My concern here is a precedent that would be set in that a statewide package would perhaps be have other counties coming in and involving local things into statewide packages, and I have a concern on the precedent.
Okay. Welcome back. Anybody else? Okay, let's go on then to Ralph Groner.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Ralph Groner, representing American Federation of State, County, Municipal Employees, many of whom are employees of road crews at the city and county level, at the local level. However, I would rather speak to the fact that we really are the kind of the public safety union in Oregon, and we also represent numerous human resource programs, and we also represent education, at least in one case, MESD. Why do I say that? I find there's a lack of thought in the building by not legislators, but at least by some lobbyists to understand the big picture, so I'm here more to talk about what you generate is just part of the equation, because to me the important issue, it's what you lose if this package doesn't pass that is the problem. And the quote in your packet, if you've had time to read it yet, will state that clearly, in that ODOT and the economists that have worked in behalf of this package estimate what the bridge problem could cost the state economy. Could be up to $123 billion in lost production and jobs in the next 25 years. That's the part I'm concerned with, and I think it turns the recession we're currently faced into an issue that's significantly important, because I don't need to tell you all, but we are the most dependent state in America on one tax, and that's the income tax, and I don't see another tax passing yet. I, of course, will be supporting those once we have hearings on those. But we don't have them pass the public, and so I will continue to view this as an income tax-funded state. I'd also like to comment on an example of that in the county I grew up in, Clackamas County, and was commissioner there for a number of years, 8 years to be exact. Many of you, Washington County, Clackamas, your county, Coos County, et cetera, have needs for major corridors to open up the economy, to produce jobs, and to move commerce. We all know that the bridges mean the commercial flow of trucks. If we don't have our bridges fixed, will significantly impact whether it's $123 billion or it could end up higher, certainly probably not lower. My county, however, is unique in that 70% of our residents caused the pollution on the highways coming into Washington County and Multnomah County, because 70% of our residents flock to other areas to work because they simply have not had the industrial base. Now Metro has said, and I need you to stick with me on this, 60% of all new residents over the next 25 years are going into the Damascus Basin. Yet Highway 212 in fact, couldn't carry another new truck, let alone 60%. It can't carry the trucks coming through now over to Highway 26 as it is. So it's a regional issue in the economy in the sense that the modernization dollars allowed in this package, using that as an example, could help get the Sunrise Corridor finally underway, going from 205 out to 26. And what that does is not only provide transportation for commerce, but opportunities for industrial development in the Damascus Basin, and that means jobs which create income tax dollars. And last, I just hope everybody in the building can put their dislikes aside that are in the bill. I have some things maybe I disagree with, but I'm older than most, and I frankly have learned you've got to compromise. Well, Dick, I'm not. You're right. You've got to compromise, and this bill is too important. Oregon schools eat up nearly 50% of our budget. If we had $123 billion hit over the next 25 years and we do not pass some form of replacement revenue by the public, folks, we have major problems compared to what we have today that you're facing with these budgets. So I think we have to override the concerns we hear from certain groups, and we have to move forward, and we have to keep the commerce flowing and income coming into the general fund. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Representative Farr.
Ms. Broner, thank you for your testimony. Very well said. Very well said. It sounds like you would agree with me that projects like the West Eugene Parkway...
Here we go.
...which are being stalled not necessarily by lack of funds, but also by litigation, it's necessary that we move forward with these projects in order to make sure that we have the free flow of commerce.
Mr. Chair, Representing Farr, thank you. I really am an advocate of increasing income tax, believe me. Not just because I'm a union representative, but for the good of this state. We need to create opportunities to increase jobs, and particularly to the extent that parkway creates new commerce and new jobs, and I know it does. Yes, similar to the Sunrise Corridor or a Coos Bay Corridor or Washington County improvements in their corridor or anyone or Yam Hill County. So,
well, and the Southeast Cynthian Drive Beautification Project in Dallas.
In doubt. You're absolutely, and we support that. Thank you.
Thank you. Judge Pryor.
Okay.
No. That was a reflection on the last exchange, not on you.
Mr. Chairman, I think Representative Barnhart may have been groaning because there's another Judge Pryor in Congress currently who's going through some hearings back there.
Was that it?
No, in fact, it wasn't a groan at all. In fact, I appreciate hearing from Judge Pryor. She always has very useful and important things to say to us, and I appreciate her very much.
All right.
Well, thank you.
What
very much, Senator. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Vice Chair and members of the committee. My name is Laura Pryor, and I'm Gillum County Judge, and I have been for quite a few years now the Transportation Chairman for the Association of Oregon Counties. It's been a great honor for me to do this, to represent some of the biggest counties in the state, when my county is hardly as big as an apartment house in some of the bigger communities. And to that end, I'd like to start off just my few comments I'd like to make by talking about Multnomah County. They're completely supportive of the package. They would rather that the amendment had not been in the bill. They understand the supportive comments from the speaker concerning all the communities and being concerned with all the communities in Multnomah County. They support that, and they really don't care if that amendment's in or out either way. They're very supportive of this package. I've said this before, and I want to say it again because I think it's important, that if dedication and hard work mean anything at all in this process, then there will be a transportation package come out of this session. By the time the money comes out, it will have been 13 years since there's been any transportation funding to the jurisdictions. Pretty much right now, this transportation package is bridge triage. That's not ODOT's fault. Mostly the blame, I think, for that goes to deregulation and the heavier loads and heavier trucks that are traveling across roads that were never, and bridges that were never constructed to carry those loads. AOC also supports and encourages the legislature to think about and accept a multi-session transportation funding strategy. Although this may be the biggest package that's ever come out, it is focused on bridges, and please remember every bridge has either a street or a road or a highway leading to it and from it. So at some point, we've got to get back and deal with the system as a whole. The Association of Oregon Counties has worked very hard for many years, every session, to try to get a package out. And so we certainly are very grateful for even getting to this point in this session and really support and encourage you to pass this package. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions?
I guess on the multi-session strategy, looking backwards, we sort of are on step two. Mm-hmm. We did OPIA in the last session and boosted that in OPIA 2. And so in essence, this really is the second. Maybe not intentionally, but it worked out. Representative Mabry.
I'm wondering if I might ask, we have a -10 amendment. Was this something that was going to be proposed by Laura or not?
Mr. Chair, Representative Mabry, for the record, my name is Bill Penhollow, representing the Association of Oregon Counties. And yes, we have submitted the -A10 amendment to correct a problem that we discovered in the special county allocation, the county base allocation provisions in Section 19. This amendment, what it does is provides for an allocation, a distribution in the upcoming fiscal year, 03-04, which we inadvertently skipped when we moved the allocation date from January to July, so that the counties that receive these revenues would have them at the beginning of the fiscal year rather than halfway through the fiscal year. And in doing that, there was the mix-up on the allocation in the upcoming fiscal year. The -A10 amendments will correct that.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Faber, did that answer your question? Thank you.
Okay. And, Bill, just for the record, and we'll come back to the A10s, but you vetted those with the governor's office and with the other stakeholders, and that they're accepted as just technical amendments.
Yes.
No opposition to the A10s.
Not to our knowledge.
Okay.
Chair.
Thank you very much. Okay, let's move on. Daryl Fuller, did you want to bring up John Watt and Keith Levitt too at the same time? Or are you going to speak for the group now? How's that going to work? Okay. So does that mean then that, John, are you off the list? Okay.
Chair Flanders, members of the committee, Chair Shetterly, and members of the committee. My name is Daryl
Fuller. Thank you, Mr. Fuller. Next we have...
I'm here today representing the Oregon Highway Users Alliance, which I have the privilege of serving as president this year, and want to let you know that we started talking about this package at a meeting that was held outside the governor's office 2 years ago after the governor's signing ceremony on OTIA, and have been talking about this package ever since. And it looks a little different than what we talked about 2 years ago, but it has been kind of a single subject organizational rule for us for the last 2 years. The Oregon Highway Users Alliance is a collection of nearly 40 associations and groups whose principal interest is getting pavement on roads. And we represent, among our members, includes AAA and the truckers and aggregate producers and auto dealers and cities and counties and railroads and ports and anybody who has an interest in seeing our economy go forward and seeing our roads in good shape and in seeing the economic development from transportation projects realized has been encouraged to participate in the Oregon Highway Users Alliance. And as many of you know, we meet on a regular basis to both eliminate and start rumors and to talk about what we know and what we don't know. And our principal goal has been to ensure that a transportation package of some kind gets through the process during the session. So we're pleased today to let you know that we have endorsed the package, which is something that we generally don't do, is endorse packages. We don't look at lots of different transportation related issues and generally don't take positions. We're more of an educational organization. We did endorse the OTIA package 2 years ago, and we're endorsing this package today, and I anticipate it's the only bill that will take a position on all session. But it's important enough to us that we fix the bridge problem, and we recognize that, again, this is a second step in what we hope is a longer process of dealing with Oregon's transportation infrastructure. And with that, I'll be glad to answer any questions you have.
All right. Questions for Mr. Fuller.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Representative Farr.
Would you agree with me? No.
And for the record, that was 70 times 7.
Thank you, Mr.
Plus
Chair.
Plus 1. Thank you. Kate Richardson.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, very briefly, Kate Richardson, Chief of Staff, Oregon State Treasurer, and the Treasurer is unable to be here today, but he wanted to go on record, one, with his continued and enthusiastic support for this bill and to see this transportation package moving forward. He's long advocated for increased use of bonding to address Oregon's critical transportation infrastructure needs, and this is an excellent example of an appropriate use of bonds that will benefit the state's economy and infrastructure both in the short term and the long term. In fact, these bonds, even in the with our bond rating downgrade that the state's general obligation bond rating took a couple of months ago, these bonds will not be impacted by that downgrade because they are revenue bonds paid after the new fees paid. And the strong rating that these bonds will enjoy in the interest rate climate just add to the wisdom of moving this package forward at this time. Despite his strong support for this package, the Treasurer does feel compelled to highlight a concern about a section of the package labeled capture of income taxes, and that's sections 23 through 27. And we distributed a letter to you addressing that, so I'll speak very briefly to it. He's troubled about the means of funding that is outlined in that section that would sequester income tax revenues to specified purposes. As you all know, the general fund relies heavily on income tax, and that is a significantly volatile revenue stream. And one of the mitigating factors to that volatility has been the flexibility provided by the appropriation process. General fund flexibility allows the state to respond more quickly and easily to changes in the economy, environment, and other emerging issues. The credit rating agencies recognize Oregon's financial flexibility as a strength that helps to counter the weakness of an income tax reliant structure. This section bypasses the appropriation process and would reduce flexibility in use of income tax revenues. The Treasurer's concern arises from the policy, not from the amount. It is a very small amount, but there are other proposals to similarly sequester income tax revenues, and we expect that others could follow this if this would be continuing or creating a policy that we would like to not see move forward. We consider this the proverbial slippery slope. The rating agencies would likely take a dim view of that trend in the state's fiscal management. And so the Treasurer advises you to seriously consider the ramifications of such a change in that policy before adopting those specific provisions. However, he strongly supports the goals of this package, and we, all of us at Treasury, look forward to working with the legislature and ODOT to issue these bonds. Thank you, and I'm glad to answer any questions.
You want to ask her about the West Lane bypass?
I used to live in West Eugene.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Then I understand that the Secretary does approve the goals that we're trying to accomplish within this, and where we sequester these dollars, but doesn't approve of the way we're funding them?
Mr. Chair, Representative Brown, he's not taking a position on the individual goals. So he's not opposed to them necessarily, but it is the policy of capturing income tax to address that when there are other means to do that through the appropriation process.
But if it wasn't for this bill and this activity created, there wouldn't be those funds there to start.
The the income tax would be coming into the general fund. That's true, but the legislature can choose to appropriate to fund those programs with those same income taxes.
And I assume the other concern you may have been making reference to would be the baseball proposal in Portland.
Mr. Chair, Representative Brown, that is an identification and a grant of income taxes, and it is very similar to this proposal. There have been others, although maybe not legislatively drafted, there are other ideas and proposals out there, and we are concerned about the trend that this may set.
Thank you.
So the Treasurer's concern is that basically this bypasses the appropriation process by simply identifying these dollars and directing that they be distributed for this particular purpose, rather than a Ways and Means decision on a biennium by biennium basis, or a Revenue Committee decision, I guess, on a biennium by biennium basis to maintain a particular tax credit.
Mr. Chair, the rating agencies have identified our appropriation process with the larger general fund as being very flexible. The emergency board can take action, for instance, in interim time periods. Other states that have, for instance, Alabama has essentially balkanized its general fund and really decreased its flexibility considerably by dedicating certain parts of their income tax or their general fund to specified purposes. That reduces their flexibility to respond to changing conditions, and that would be our concern here about the trend.
Okay. Representative Virgin?
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to say that I greatly appreciate the Treasurer bringing this to the committee. I have serious concerns about this in being a precedent in changing policy and also the inflexibility of that. It just changes the process. And while the goals may be there, I would have much preferred to see that it follow, and it's not a lot of money, but I would have much preferred to see that it followed the traditional process. And I think the end result would have been the same, but I do think, again, this sets a precedent that I really firmly have questions about.
No, I'm not without concerns about it as well. I guess, though, in terms of the flexibility, there is flexibility in the sense that the legislature in the next session or some session after that could repeal the tax credit. I mean, isn't that correct?
Mr. Chair, that's true. There are still ways to address that. There is just a standard process in place, and that and I would like to add that the Treasurer strongly supports this package. This is a small issue. Right. It's just a policy issue we feel compelled to raise.
And I guess you did mention the credit ratings. So I'll cover that. You said they have concerns about this trend. Would this be considered? Is this tip of the toe in the water a trend, or is this something that's is likely not to raise concern all by itself?
Mr. Chair, I think it's probably difficult to identify exactly when you started downhill, at what point you start slipping down that slope. I do believe that as soon as certain actions are taken, they can be pointed to in future times. And so would the credit rating agencies identify this one? I can't say.
Okay. So like in the Ways and Means bills, and I put budget notes, maybe we can put a bill note. And this one is, don't do this again. Okay.
Mr. Chair, we'd support that.
You'd support that. Maybe even an amendment. This is a bad idea, but. Okay, thank you very much.
Did that get bipartisan support?
Yeah. All right. Okay, we have a few more, just a couple more, I guess. Jacob Rostov?
Thank you, Chair Shetterly, members of the committee. I'm Jacob Rostoff. I'm the transportation advocate with 1,000 Friends of Oregon. I'm here briefly just to discuss some proposed amendments that I think you all have in front of you.
We don't, actually.
You don't? Okay, well, then let me...
16?
That's right. Let me share some copies then. I apologize for that. I thought you all had them.
Oh, that's the 16.
Do we have things?
I have.
Okay. Some do, some don't.
Well, that's good because I don't think I have enough copies for real. I'm afraid. The Dash 16s are short, and I'll just briefly summarize the intent and the results of the amendments. Essentially, the amendments ensure that that the funding created for transportation projects in the bill will be used for projects that are ready to go, that are ready to move forward. And that might be a phase of a project or a complete project, but it requires that the projects that have done their homework and rise to the top of the list are ready to move forward. Those are the ones that get funding before other projects get funding. So our intent there is that the money goes out as quickly as possible to the projects that are actually going to result in better transportation for Oregonians before projects with other kinds of issues to work out get funding. And then secondly, I wanted to briefly talk about our concerns about the income tax sequestration in the bill. And I understand there have been some other testimony in regards to that. But we strongly object to the income tax sequestration at a time when programs like passenger rail, rural transit, transportation, medical transportation for the elderly and disabled are being cut left and right. It just doesn't make sense to us, at least, to steal any potential growth in the income tax away from those programs in order to fund a tax credit whose environmental benefit is dubious at best. It's unclear that the tax credit will have any positive environmental benefit. So to us, it amounts to the taxpayer basically buying engines for truckers at a time when we can't find ways to get folks to the hospital and we can't find ways to keep the extra passenger trains happening in the state and we can't find ways to continue to fund rural transit. So we object to the tax credit. We think that's not a wise policy decision. And with that, I'm happy to answer any questions. I appreciate you all taking the time to hear our testimony.
All right. Thank you very much. Questions for Mr. Brostow? Representative Berger?
I have just a quick question, Jason, and that is, have you been involved in the process of the package?
No. As a matter of fact, that's partly why these amendments are coming to you at this time. In fact, that's the reason why they're coming to you at this time. The process has been, at least for us, a closed and opaque one. And so we're here making use of the process we have access to, which is this hearing. I regret that we couldn't get these issues out on the table earlier, but it's hard to do that when you're excluded from the negotiations that led up to what you have in front of you.
Mr. Chair.
That was an open process.
Yeah, Representative Brown.
Jacob, was you or Randy at the meeting we had about a little over a week ago? We set one Friday, I think it was a Friday, for about several hours and went through amendments and discussed the bill. Were you there?
Chair Shetterly, Representative Brown, we were there, and that was actually the first meeting that we attended. So I guess when I referred to the process in response to Representative Verger's question, I was referring to all the process leading up to that. But to be clear, yes, we were at that meeting.
So they weren't included until they were included.
Yeah, they weren't included until they were there.
Okay. That's a fair statement, Chair Shetterly.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Matt Blevins. Oh, very quiet for you, Matt.
Chair Shetterly, members of the committee, for the record, Matt Blevins, Legislative Affairs Director with the Oregon Environmental Council. Committee, we stand here not opposed to this package, but wanted to raise some concerns. Before that, though, I wanted to, again, thank the committee for addressing some of the concerns we had initially, which was dealing with the registration fees for hybrid vehicles. We applaud the committee for putting together a package that does not penalize hybrid owners for owning hybrid vehicles. So we applaud you on that. But we do want to, again, raise the concern that we have over the tax credit for diesel engines that's as part of the package. Obviously, we want to see cleaner diesel engines out there on the road, and the EPA is requiring these engines to be installed starting next year, so they're going to be. We just question the wisdom of providing a tax credit at this point when we're in such a fiscal crunch as a state to put these engines in that are already required under law. So we would encourage the committee to look at that and to think about if there are better ways to be spending those available fees that we have or funds at this time. If that'll take any questions.
Any questions for Matt? All right. Thank you very much. That's all I have in the way of sign-ups. Is there anybody out there who needed to speak to us who didn't get signed up? Okay, committee, we will deal with the amendments when we get back together. And I wish I could tell you exactly when that would be. We certainly will be together tomorrow. I don't know if it'll be on this. We've got another bill tomorrow. If things were to fall together quickly enough, I might even try to scrape up a meeting this afternoon. But we'll let you know. So everybody, we're on. We'll go on at least 1 hour notice. Please stay tuned. We'll try to make sure we get that posted if we're able to go this afternoon. Otherwise, we will be meeting tomorrow morning. Kathy, do you know what time tomorrow morning? 9:30? Okay. All right. With that, everybody, thank you very much. I'll close the work session on House Bill 2041, and we are adjourned.